The following is an encore episode of Hour One of the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. We hope you enjoy. Welcome to the Turley Frequency with Kevin Turley, a show for you and by you. The phone lines are open, so call now at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881 and share with us your thoughts and prayer intentions as we navigate this complicated world together. And now your host of the Turley Frequency, Kevin Turley.
Good morning and welcome to the Turley Frequency with me, your host, Kevin Turley, coming to you live and exclusive here on the Archangel Radio. Well, how are you feeling today? Some interesting news overnight, no? No doubt you've been catching up on the big news. Yes, the Powerball was won. Absolutely. Some poor, unfortunate ticket holder. And if you were listening to the show yesterday, you'll know why I use the adjective unfortunate. Some poor, unfortunate ticket holder in California, no less, northeast of Los Angeles, I believe, is the proud recipient now of $2 billion. $2 billion. I'm sure it's more than that. He loses some from tax. Yesterday we were looking at $1.9 billion and we worked out it was $173,000 per day. I think we should have the death march, not the cheering, but thank you for that. By the way,
that was the boo.
Mike,
that was the boo.
That's Mike booing because he didn't win it. If he won it, Archangel would be intergalactic, as we said yesterday. But Powerball, $2.1 billion. This is going to be an interesting story to watch. First of all, are we going to find out who this individual is? And then is he ever going to have a life worth living once people have discovered you're worth $2 billion? That's a lot of money. A lot of money. Okay, now the other news, if you've been listening to LA Catholic Morning, you will have been just listening to Dan Burke talking about this. The other big news of the night was the elections, the midterm elections. Now, I went on various sites this morning, various U.S. sites, to check out what had happened. And I have to say, I was very pleasantly surprised that Alabama seems to have sorted itself out pretty quickly. I don't know, Mike, is this the norm that Alabama is always ahead of the curve on these sorts of things?
You're darn right we are. Roll Tide, as we say, as we Alabama fans say.
Roll Tide, I like that.
Roll Tide, yeah.
But also, you seem to know what you want. You vote for who you want. No shilly-shallying, messing about, nothing. Just vote. Got a governor, got a senator, got a congressman, got a congresswoman, bang, whatever. All good stuff. Unfortunately, for the rest of the country, well, the votes are all over the place in certain districts and in certain states. And no doubt there'll be some disappointment. Certainly, I heard Ellen and Todd talking about this. There'll be some disappointment about certain propositions that were being voted through, namely in California and Vermont in particular, where they voted through anti-life legislation using various euphemisms. Which stretched the English language to breaking point. I mean, how can you talk about reproductive rights when you're destroying that, which is the fruit of reproduction? Sad. Made me sad and disappointed me. As we talked on the show yesterday, no matter how you vote, you can't really vote for things which are totally contrary to the gospel. And the gospel's all about life, not about death. But it's also a reminder that voting alone and the political process in general is never going to be the thing that brings about a culture of life, not on its own. Think about it. We need to create a civilization of love in which that culture of life resides. Now, this is not some new novel idea I cooked up in the last few minutes. This is basic thought of the late, great John Paul II. A number of encyclicals set out what a Christian society should at least be aiming for in terms of a civilization and a culture of life, in direct contradiction and direct opposition to the culture of death, which seems to be what the Western world is wedded to at the moment on both sides of the Atlantic. It's not just a US problem. So how do we create a society that protects and values life from the womb to the tomb? Well, the political system is to some extent the outflow of that society. And we really do get the politicians we deserve sometimes, sadly. Or more specifically, I should say, the leaders that the majority in any democracy wish for. Now, listen, I'm sitting here talking to you this morning on Wednesday, the 9th of November, year of our Lord, 2022. It's still the year of our Lord. It was yesterday, it is today, and it will be tomorrow. So don't worry about that. But you can call in at any time on 888-928-0881 and have your say. Let me know what you think. Tell me how you're feeling. Give me your analysis of what happened last night. What went right?
Inconceivable.
What went wrong. You can text in on 251-928-2111. That's 251-928-2111. So, Charlie Frequency is here for you. Do feel free to call in anytime you like. So don't despair too much about any election. Not just this one, but any election, because there'll be other elections. There seems to be a lot of elections in the United States. And rightly so. That's what democracies have, lots of elections. But every election is going to be, to some extent, a disappointment because, well, remember, building this city of God here in this realm is always a work in progress. We know that from our own individual ways of being, that we are a work in progress, but we also know collectively society is nothing more than the collection of people together trying to create something. So it's always going to be imperfect, right? Well, imperfect is probably an understatement. It's always going to be a bit of a mess, right? And this is something that the purely politically motivated seem to forget. Whether they are campaigning for political parties or political causes, there's always an element of utopia around their thinking. There certainly is at the moment in this country among the ecologically minded who have got a very utopian view of what this society, Western society, should be, and something so far removed from the rest of us that I just can't see it not only not catching on, but even not really being comprehensible to most people. Now, by the way, do you know where the word utopia comes from? Mike, do you know where the word utopia comes from?
I can't say that I do. Is it, it's not Latin, right? I mean, everything seems to come from Latin or Greek.
No, I think utopia comes from St. Thomas More.
Oh, really?
St. Thomas More wrote a sort of satire of, you could say it was one of those proto-science fiction novels, you know, and it was about a place which was very different from the world he lived in and from this realm. And it was a political satire, but it was dressed up in very kind of imaginative and speculative images. So in some ways, we have a Catholic saint to thank us for the word utopia. But what the utopians forget is that St. Thomas More was dealing in satire. St. Thomas More was a man who walked the streets of London with his feet very much upon the ground. His head and his heart may have been looking heavenward, but this was a man who lived in the thick of the political cut and thrust of Tudor England. So he was not in, and he was the Chancellor of England, so he was in no way was he removed from society and its ills and its problems, nor was he some sort of philosophical dreamer. So people who are politically motivated alone tend to forget that. But what do you think? Am I talking rubbish, garbage? Maybe I've got it all wrong. Maybe you think we need to just forget about politics altogether. Maybe you think we need to get more involved in politics. There's a case for both of those. 888-928-0881. Or text me on 251-928-0881. 1-800-273-2111. Have your say. Get it off your chest. Text me your thoughts this morning as to what went wrong or what went right. But, you know, I was thinking about this when I was listening to Dan Burke on the Catholic Morning, the LA Catholic Morning. Dan is an interesting man. I don't know if you've read any of his stuff or seen him on other programs. He's always got an interesting take on things because he sees things through the lens of faith very much. And what was coming to my mind as he was speaking is maybe it's good for us sometimes to lose in this world. Good for us spiritually. It's good to feel or to see our hopes dashed in whatever field they are, be they personal or political. Now, why is that? Well, they remind us that we have here, as St. Paul wrote to the Hebrews, no abiding city. We are strangers in a strange land. We always will be. We're on our way somewhere else. We may get comfortable in this world. We may enjoy this world. We may feel at times very comfortable. Yes, comfortable is the word. However, it's the comfort of people in a departure lounge. We are heading somewhere else. Now, you know what St. Therese of Avila, the doctor of the church, said about this life in general. She said it was a noisy night in a bad inn. A noisy night in a bad inn. Well, last night was a noisy political night in a bad state of affairs sometimes in different places. We shouldn't be surprised. And maybe it's good to be reminded, to be jolted out of that comfort zone and to be said, actually, do you know what? We're not in our home. We're in a kind of war zone. And what Dan Burke was referring to earlier in that conversation was that this is the reality that we Christians live in. We're not called, as C.S. Lewis said, we're not called to get into a nice, warm, hot, soapy bath. We're called to the front lines. We're called to the edge of the battle. Sometimes we're called to enter into the battle. And this comes in all sorts of strange ways. Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not for a moment advocating that Catholics need to withdraw from the society around them or heaven offend the political systems that we have around us. No. I would argue the opposite, that we Christians need to get into those political systems and argue for all that is true, all that is good, and all that is beautiful. But we also have to live realizing that politics, in particular, will always be more the nearly good, the very bad, and the downright ugly. And often the only motivation that some people will have to enter into that arena is one hand with a fistful of dollars and another stretched out for a few dollars more. But enough of these Clint Eastwood film references. Now, we have a message that's just popped up on my screen. It's anonymous. If you do message the show on 251-928-2111, I'd love it if you just put a name or an initial, just a first name or an initial, and where you're texting from. It's always good just to position you in my mind as to where you're coming from. So this text has just come in saying, I wonder if the gospel message can speak to us today. Christ got mad in the marketplace, but he also said, build the temple, and we are the temple. Absolutely. I think that in some ways, you made me think about the readings this morning at Mass, because they're all about the feast of St. John Lateran. Now, I don't know about you, but I always scratch my head a little bit when this feast comes up, because why are we celebrating a building? But we're not celebrating a building, right? We're celebrating something much more than just a building. And as the readings today remind us, they're also teaching us about the nature of the temple. the temple as a building in the Old Testament, and then the temple as the temple of the Holy Spirit in the New Testament, and also the temple of our Lord's body, which is the new temple in the New Testament. So we are celebrating, reminding ourselves of that. And I'm glad that the texter brought that up, because what you're also reminding me is that the world in which we live in is temporal, whereas we're focused on the heavenly temple, which comes in another world. And if anybody's in any doubt of that, start reading the book of Revelation. It's a wonderful read in times like this, because it kind of blows your mind. Don't you think? It throws you. It's like being thrown into some sort of strange movie where the images and the pyrotechnics and the creatures that are there are all unfamiliar. That's why some people give up on the book of Revelation, because it's hard for us to work out what's going on. But that's because we're viewing it with the eyes of this world. We need to view it with the eyes of the next world. The temple. We must keep our eyes on the temple. And the temple, as you know, the temple was destroyed in 70 AD by the Romans, partly as a kind of prophecy to the ending of the earthly temple. Because after that, as the prophets of the Old Testament had prophesied, people would worship in spirit and in truth, and they would worship the Lord with the law written upon their hearts. And that came about through the incarnation of our Lord and Savior, Jesus Christ. Now, I quoted to you from the book of Hebrews about we have no abiding city. But what St. Paul goes on to say, or the author of the Hebrews, it's disputed who wrote that, but the author of the Hebrews goes on to say that Jesus Christ is the same today as he was yesterday and as he will be tomorrow. And that is our hope. That is our faith. No politician, no political party, no political system, no matter how good, not even any country per se. Our faith is in something beyond that, and our hope is in something beyond that. Why? Because we're citizens of that land. We're heading to that destination. So it's very important that we play our part in this realm. It's very important that we play our part in the societies around us. That's what a good citizen is. That's what a good Christian citizen is. Absolutely. But we shouldn't get despondent. We shouldn't get downhearted. And we shouldn't put too much faith in these things, because we only have so much faith, and it needs to be placed in the right place. And that is with our Lord, with our heavenly King in the heavenly kingdom. Now, talking of heavenly kingdoms and the body, when we come back, we're changing gears. Okay, we're not going to be talking politics. We're going to be talking food. And in particular, we're going to be talking about Alabama food. Yeah, we have Bob Carlton joining us. He's a writer about Alabama cuisine, and I can't wait to speak to him, because I want to hear about all these great dishes that are particular to Alabama. And I've had a quick look at Bob's website, and some of the photographs alone would make you hungry. So I can't wait to speak to him after the break. Now, coming up at the top of the hour, we're going to have the chaplet as usual. And we're going to pray for our November dead list, which is now quite extended after yesterday's intervention from a number of people. So we have plenty of people on that. But there's still plenty of room for others. If you want me to pray, or us to pray, for any of your recently departed or long since departed, then we'd be very happy to do so on the chaplet. And you can also phone in during the chaplet on 888-928-0881 and ask for prayers for a specific reason. It could be a family reason, it could be health, it could be employment, it could be anything you like. Phone in on that number, 888-928-0881, and we'd be glad to pray for you. Alternatively, at any time during the show, text in your prayer requests on 251-928-2111. That's 251-928-2111. And we'll, of course, add those into the chaplet at the top of the next hour. And then in the final segment of this show, we are going to be talking the Titanic. Yes, I'm going to tell you a story about a holy priest on the Titanic and its connection with the Divine Mercy Chaplet. So all that good stuff is coming up. So stay with me back after these words when we're talking Alabama food.
Welcome back to the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. The phone lines are open, so call now at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881 and share with us your thoughts and prayer intentions as we navigate this complicated world together. And now your host of the Turley Frequency, Kevin Turley.
Hello and welcome back to the Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. And it is my great honor to welcome Bob Carlton to the show. Bob, welcome on board.
Hey, it's my honor to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Now, Bob, you write extensively on Alabama food and culture for This Is Alabama, AL.com, and the Birmingham News. So I thought you were the best person to help a complete newbie like me. You can probably tell I'm not from Alabama, to understand something of the riches of the Alabama cuisine. So if I was coming to Alabama for the first time and you were preparing a dinner party for me, what would be on the menu?
Wow. Golly, there's so many riches to start with. But, you know, I don't know if I would be the one to prepare it, but I would serve you. I would serve you some Alabama barbecue. I would serve you some fried green tomatoes. I would serve you some orange rolls, some sweet orange rolls, or some biscuits. I would serve you some peach cobbler for dessert.
Now you're going to have to stop there, Bob, because it's almost like you're setting this table with all these wonderful dishes, and I don't quite know where they are and what they are. So let's begin at the starters again. So just run me through what would be a good starter in Alabama. What would be the thing that really people thought, yes, that's an Alabaman dish?
For an entree, it would be barbecue. You know, we smoked barbecue, which is, you know, pork. Some places do shoulders and some places do butts and some places do whole hogs and ribs. But, you know, pork barbecue is a big thing in Alabama. So
a pork barbecue just to begin with. This is a starter, right?
Well, that would be your main
dish. The main.
Yeah.
I was going to say, that would finish me off, Bob, if that was the starter. Yeah. That would be the end of it.
Yeah. I wanted to say, but, you know, all that said, we're blessed to live, border on the Gulf Coast of the Gulf of Mexico. And so we have an abundant supply of Alabama Gulf seafood, everything from snapper and grouper and crab to, you know, oysters, shrimp. So I don't want to sell that part short either. I think we're probably as popular for our seafood as we are our barbecue, to be honest with you.
Well, that's the thing. I was looking at your website earlier, and I was just picking up on the rich diversity of foods available in Alabama. You've got seafood, you've got good land, obviously. So you're producing good cattle, good pork.
Right.
Is that partly why the cuisine looks so good? I'm sure it tastes good as well. But is it the fertility of the land that you live in?
Yeah, that has a lot to do with it. A lot of our restaurants, even the smaller restaurants, do what we call farm to table, where they source their proteins that they put on their menus with, local farmers. And some of them have almost exclusive deals with local farmers that, they get all their pork from a local farmer, or they get all their beef from a local farmer.
Yes.
And so, yeah.
I mean, this farm-to-table movement is something which I've experienced in other parts of the United States. I remember going to a restaurant in Texas where they literally took you outside and showed you where all the ingredients came from, including some of the livestock. Has this kind of movement caught on in Alabama as well?
Yeah, and actually, it's almost become cliche at this point, the whole expression. But there is a chef here in Birmingham, Frank Stitt, who owns a number of restaurants. His most prominent being Highlands Bar and Grill, but which won the James Beard Award as the most outstanding restaurant in America in 2018. But he kind of championed that whole farm to table movement. I want to say at least 20 years or so ago. And, it's just about every restaurant you go to now. If you go and you sit down and you look at the menu, they just don't say a chicken breast. They say a Joyce Farms chicken, breast.
Right.
They tell you where it's coming from, not just what it is, but where it's coming from.
Do you think, Bob, that's the biggest change? Certainly in my lifetime, it seems to have been the biggest change, that people really are concerned, certainly on this side of the Atlantic, and I'm sure in the United States it's the same. People are really concerned about where and how their food has come about.
I think so. But I think the bottom line is that they want to get a pleasurable, enjoyable, delicious meal too. So, I think that, I think knowing that it's organic or locally sourced or hormone free is a bonus. But
absolutely. Now, we're coming up to a very big feast in the United States, which is Thanksgiving, something we don't have this side of the Atlantic. And in our minds, even over here, Thanksgiving is synonymous with food, right? People often talk about the dinner table at Thanksgiving and getting the family around the dinner table or getting your friends or whatever. So does Alabama have a particular Thanksgiving spread?
Yeah, I mean, it's a traditional, it's a turkey, either oven roasted turkey, and I've never cooked it. I'm soon to be 65 years old, and I have never cooked a turkey in my life, but I've certainly eaten a lot, and sliced a few, but I have a wonderful wife who takes care of that, The centerpiece is the turkey, and a lot of people have actually started frying the turkey, which the whole concept seems kind of crazy, but it's a quicker way of cooking the turkey, and actually the meat in the turkey is quite moist. But we also and then the side that goes with it is what we call dressing. Some people call it stuffing, but we call it dressing, and it's made out of cornbread, which cornbread is really synonymous with the South.
Tell me what
so you have a cornbread.
Forgive cornbread my ignorance, dressing. Bob. What is cornbread?
Cornbread is made with cornmeal and buttermilk and maybe an egg thrown in there and just a little bit of vegetable oil, and you whip it all together, and you I put it in a hot cast iron skillet, and mm-hmm. you put it in the oven, and it rises and it cooks, and it's a just kind of a mealy bread.
Yes, I think we call them dumplings or something like that over here. You know, there's something similar. I kind of get it. It's a bit like do you have what's called biscuits in the United States?
Oh yeah,
biscuits
sure,
and gravy.
Yeah.
Do you know what that is?
Yeah. Of course, yeah.
Because whenever I went, it was in a breakfast diner, and I went, and somebody said you got to have biscuits and gravy for breakfast, and I thought, well, I don't know what that is. I'll have a go. And I couldn't believe what came on the table for breakfast, right? Is this something in Alabama that people eat as well, biscuits and gravy?
Oh, absolutely, yes, definitely. That is more of a breakfast deal. Cornbread is more something that you have at lunch or dinner time. Biscuits are a breakfast deal.
Right.
And
so,
we even have something called chocolate gravy. Have you ever had chocolate gravy over there?
No, but my heart is sinking.
It's not a big thing, but it's a novelty, but some people love it. So.
Okay. So listen, Bob, I've never been to Alabama, not yet anyway, but you are a food and restaurant critic. Now, you're the sort of person that everybody that's a visitor loves to meet. Now, if you had your lost relatives coming, your long-lost cousins from Ireland coming to visit you, where would you say to go restaurant-wise, in Fairhope or in Mobile?
Okay. Well, let's see. Golly. In Fairhope, I just got back from Fairhope, by the way. Mm-hmm. I was just down there about a week or so ago. There's a beautiful restaurant it's called Fly Creek Marina is the marina, but the restaurant is called Sunset Point. And I would take them there to watch the sunset and eat a grouper sandwich and maybe get some crab meatballs, which are meatballs made with crab meat.
So I'm taking Bob that is a seafood restaurant given its proximity to the ocean.
Yes, but they have non seafood items on the menu too. But you want to, I mean, you're so close to the, I mean, it's kind of like the analogy or the story you were telling me about the place where you could eat and they would show you where they got the meat from. I mean, you're right there at the water. You might as well get their fresh seafood. So, I would go to Sunset Point in Fairhope, in Mobile. Let me see. There's a restaurant that it's called Dolphins, DAUPHIN'S, and it's in the tower. A big office building. It has a spectacular view of Mobile Bay. It has a spectacular menu. It's owned by a former NFL and Alabama football player, Bob Pomhauer. He's a prominent restaurateur in Alabama. And they, too, have a lot of, a lot of seafood dishes, but, you know, they have other things on the menu from, steaks and chicken and things like that. So, and they have a great Sunday brunch as well. So those would be my two go-to spots.
They sound absolutely wonderful, both of them. You've absolutely whetted my appetite for this. Now, my final question, Bob, is a little bit left field, but just bear with me, okay? And
okay.
It's this. You know the old saying that a condemned man ate a healthy meal, right? What would be, if you had one last Alabaman meal to eat, what would it consist of?
Wow, let's see. I would start with,
maybe it's too much. We're going to have to go for a break in a moment, Bob. So I put you on the spot.
No. I mean, I just,
There's so many to choose from, Kevin. I'm going to back him up on Bob on this because
too many
there's
to choose.
So, Lord, yes. Because we're all about our food, whether it's seafood, you know, steak, meats, chicken wings, barbecue, you name it. I mean, that's just that's really putting sure that's enough. That would put me on the spot too, because it would be so hard for me to choose. And I love food. You ask Ellen that.
I think Bob that Mike has just reprieved you from your condemned cell. But I hope you'll come back and talk to us about Alabama food, and maybe next time you can tell us about what would be that last meal if you had just one last meal to take.
Yeah, I will say I would know where my last restaurant would be. I would go to the Bright Star in Bessemer, Alabama. It's a 115-year-old restaurant, and I would order their Greek-style tenderloin. So there you go. I'd have a slice of pie for dessert. So.
And I'm going to back up Bob again on this one. It would have to be, yes, you hit the nail on the head. That one or Dreamland. The saying is, in Dreamland, ain't nothing like them nowhere. And Kevin, I will have to ship you some Dreamland ribs. Ain't nothing like them nowhere.
Absolutely. Well, listen, Bob, you've definitely whetted my appetite for all this wonderful Alabaman cuisine. I hope you've enjoyed being on the show. I hope you come back and talk to us maybe more about seasonal food at some point, and also the whole process about how food is being grown and the good nurturing nature of food that is in so much modern farming. But for now, thank you so much for coming on the Turley Frequency.
All right. Thank you for having me. I appreciate it.
Okay. 888-928-0881. I want to hear what you think. Good food from Alabama. Back after these words.
Welcome back to the Turley Frequency with host Kevin Turley. The phone lines are open, so call now at 888-928-0881. That's 888-928-0881. And share with us your thoughts and prayer intentions as we navigate this complicated world together. And now, your host of the Turley Frequency, Kevin Turley.
Hello and welcome back. The Turley Frequency here live and exclusive on Archangel Radio. Well, what did you make of all that? Food in Alabama. It whetted my appetite for it. It sounded amazing. Have you any thoughts on that? I'd love to hear. Call me on 888-928-0881 or text me on 251-928-2111. Now, talking of texts, I've just had a text in from Malia from Fairhope. Thank you, Malia, for your text. However, your question, I think Mike might know the answer to, because I certainly don't. Mike,
yes.
Do we know where the word hush puppy comes from?
God, you stumped me.
Malia, if you're near a phone, 888-928-0881, because now you confuse two men.
Yeah,
me. Hush puppy.
No, it's you know, made from, you know, like again, like, you know, cornmeal, and very similar to a it's just a small ball, like a ball of cornbread almost. It's served with seafood dishes, but the name and why we call it a hush puppy, I'm embarrassed to say that I have no idea. But if somebody knows, hold on, I am Googling this.
No, don't Google it, Mike. No, that's too easy.
Okay. All right.
If there's anybody listening who has managed to refrain from Googling and knows the answer, and it may be you, Malia, then why don't you call in? Put us out of our misery on 888-928-0881. Hush puppies. I've got no idea where that word comes from, or those words. I've got no idea. Wasn't Bob good fun, Mike?
I love, you know, I've growing up in Birmingham, I used to read his articles a lot and get ideas on, you know, where we should go out to eat. You know, tell my mom, hey, let's go out to, you know, this new restaurant or this restaurant that we haven't been to before. And so, you know, my mom and dad would oblige because, you know, we like to eat and would love to go out a lot. And so Bob was always very helpful in that regard. But we've got a caller right now. Hold on for just a second. And let me put her on hold real quick and get her on. All right, we're on the line with Michelle. Michelle from originally from Fairhope. Michelle.
Michelle, welcome to the Charlie Frequency.
I can't believe I got through to talk to you.
I can't believe you called me.
I can't believe you don't know what a hush puppy is. A hush puppy. Everybody knows what a hush puppy is.
I know what it is, but where does it get the name though?
No, Mike and Michelle. Can I say that I do not know what a hush puppy is, Michelle? So start at the beginning, right? This is the slow learners class. Tell me what a hush puppy is. Let's start at the beginning. What is a hush puppy?
I can't believe they don't have hush puppies in UK.
But tell us what it is, though, Michelle.
Oh, maybe. It's like a ball of dough. It's like a cornbread ball that's deep fried, and it's got corn. It's got little nuggets of corn in it, and so many people even put confectioner sugar on top of it.
Yes, and that's what I said at the very beginning. You know, it's like cornbread, but in a ball. But I just don't know where it got the name, why we call it, you know, hush puppy. I don't know the origin of the name.
I don't know either. Maybe some dog was barking and somebody just threw it and said, "Why don't you hush puppy?" And there we had a hush puppy. What do you think?
I like. Maybe they threw the dish at the puppy and it hushed the puppy.
Yeah.
Michelle, answer me this: how often each week would you eat a hush puppy?
Oh Lord, you haven't seen me in the mirror. A hush puppy. I like a hush puppy. I like them. So what I do is I make them and then I freeze them and then I serve them with they're always good with like ham and stuff like that.
Mhm. So how often? Twice a week? Once a week?
Yeah, maybe once a week.
So would it be fair to say that it's a kind of staple dish in Alabama, a hush puppy?
Yeah, I mean, you go to any buffet, they're good. They've got hush puppies. Just about any good chicken restaurant or any good rib place has hush puppies on it. Usually, I don't know, I think it's more of a home meal. You know what? Really? In the UK, don't y'all have some, you have some weird names for some food, don't you? Like, what is the spotted dick?
Yes, I'm glad you brought that up. Well, a spotted dick is it's a very English dish. And it's basically a kind of the leftovers from a meal sort of all in a pot, put in the oven and cooked. You know, it's kind of thrown together. So it's a bit nondescript. I'm Irish, not English. So it's a Northern English dish, which I'm not that familiar with. But it's more or less a kind of leftovers cooked up in a pot type thing. That's my understanding. But any other dishes that I may have heard of, that one's not so familiar to me.
Interesting. Now, what kind of dishes have you heard from about? What kind of, are there weird dishes in Ireland?
Well, we have different names for certain dishes. But, I mean, British cuisine is much of a muchness, to be honest. I mean, we eat a lot of turkey, especially at Christmas. That's the big meal. So we don't have Thanksgiving, as you know, but we have Christmas. And it's turkey or it's goose. At Christmas. I don't know, do you eat many geese in Alabama?
We don't eat a lot of geese. We eat pheasants. Sometimes don't we eat pheasants?
Ah, pheasants.
Not geese. Yeah, pheasant. We'll eat pheasant, especially during hunting season, but not geese.
You know, I we get a lot of pheasant here as well. But you know what I don't like about pheasant, Michelle? Having to pick the buckshot out of your teeth.
Yeah, that's not nice. That's not
especially if you crunch on it, you know, when you got the buckshot and you're crunching on it, it just spoils the meal a bit. You know, you're constantly having to take it out. But can I tell you what a hush puppy is, or what hush puppies were in the British Isles for many decades. They weren't food. There was a style of shoe which was known as a hush puppy. And it was a kind of it wasn't a sort of formal shoe, and it wasn't a sneaker. It was something in between, and it was known as a hush puppy. So if you went into the streets of London and asked somebody, where's your hush puppy? They'd be talking about shoes, not about balls of dough deep fried with nuggets of cornbread. Isn't that amazing?
Well, I think the rest of the country, they think of hush puppies as shoes. It's just down south we eat.
Ah, so we're not completely. But the south is a land of its own, right? From what I'm gathering, I've been to Texas. That's the closest I've got to the south. But it's different. People have different food. The weather is different. They obviously some the culture's very different than other parts of the United States, which makes it all the more fun. But a lot of the south has been heavily influenced by the British Isles, wouldn't you say, Michelle?
Oh, I'd say, yeah. Oh, absolutely. With history, with everything. Yeah, I would absolutely say. I mean, the Brits were in Mobile. They were in Pensacola for a long time too. So it's definitely been influenced by it.
Yeah, but even the sort of Appalachian Mountains and that sort of thing, an awful lot of people went from the part of Ireland I come from, and they all ended up sort of in the Appalachians, playing fiddles and playing guitars and singing. Country music, for example, in Ireland, country music is huge, absolutely huge.
In Ireland?
Yeah, it's absolutely huge. Bigger than rock music.
Don't y'all like fiddles and stuff like that?
It's Johnny Cash. it's all American stuff and sort of Irish equivalent of American stuff. You know, Irish, it's called country and western, and it's basically the whole iconography of the United States West imported into the Irish music scene.
Well, what about you too? Don't you two come from Belfast or somewhere like that?
No, they're from Dublin. They were criticized a lot in England because they said that they sang with American accents, which wasn't true, actually. I mean, they're probably singing with transatlantic accents. But they're rock music. I mean, rock music is everywhere. But country music in Ireland is huge. Absolutely huge. So people like, as I say, Johnny Cash and all the modern stars who I don't really know very much about, they are as big in Ireland. They sell out huge stadiums, and people love their music because you got to remember that Ireland and certainly parts of Britain as well are still very rural. They're still rural communities, small towns, farmlands, and people identify much more with places like the southern states of the United States than with large cities like London, New York, or Los Angeles, much more.
What do you think is the biggest difference between Americans, maybe even Southern Americans, and maybe the people you meet in the UK?
That's a very good question, and it's hard to generalize. I would say if we're talking about people from Alabama or from the South that I've met in my time, I would say the biggest difference and the biggest shock to people from the southern states of the United States is how irreligious most Europeans are.
Huh.
You know, religion plays no – I mean – The state religion of the British Isles is not Anglicanism, it's agnosticism, which is equivalent to really saying I couldn't care less. Whereas, you know the old joke about, not a joke, but people describe themselves sometimes in the United States as, what is it, bullets, beans, and the Bible, you know, that sort of thing, you know, that sort of way of looking at the world, which is grounded in the land, grounded in faith, and grounded in an element of self-determination. All of that is very alien to the European mind, which is much more irreligious, most people live in cities, so they have no understanding of the countryside or how food is grown, for example, the sort of thing Bob was talking about. And they've got no idea about self-protection or self-reliance. You know, it's always relying on the state. So I think that that's the biggest difference, Michelle, I would say. It's a mentality. And it's not a good one. I'm not suggesting it's a good one.
Hey, Kevin, sorry to interrupt. Michelle just dropped out. So we've got a caller from Birmingham, Richard Jesse calling from Birmingham. Rich, you're on the line with Kevin Turley on the Turley Frequency.
Richard, are you calling from Birmingham, Alabama, or Birmingham, England?
Well, as you'll be able to tell by my accent, Birmingham, Alabama, for certain, Kevin. But I can see you might be familiar with the opposite of that for sure.
I am.
I like this topic, you guys talking about Alabama food. I just had to chime in as far as cuisines go. I find it very interesting, the variety of barbecues, not only across the nation, so to speak, but in Alabama. And I've always just particularly enjoyed going to these different local barbecue places, these down-home places, and seeing how they do their barbecue and how it differs one from the other. Maybe they have creamy slaw, maybe they have vinegar slaw, maybe they have what they call jailhouse slaw, toast
bun. Wait, what is this? What is slaw? Tell me what slaw is.
Oh, slaw is a it's cabbage. It starts with cabbage, and it's
nice.
Generally slathered with either vinegar or vinegar mayo and sugar. And in the case of like jailhouse slaw, it's a mustard base sauce that goes with it. And some people put it on their barbecues, some people put it on the side. And I think that's part of the beauty of barbecue as an Alabama cuisine is the so many different ways that it's done. And that's one of the things I just particularly enjoy about living in Alabama and in that cuisine.
Well, tell me, do you think that this is because of the nature of Alabama in the sense that it's had many different types of peoples, comings and goings and settling? Do you think that that has kind of added to this kind of richness of cuisine?
Yeah, I think that's an interesting perspective, and I've never quite thought of it that way. But, yeah, lots of different cultures combining, you know, all over the place and here in Alabama. So that's a good point, Kevin. I never really thought about it that way, but it's certainly cool to enjoy it.
Thanks. Because you know,
thank you, Rich, for the call. I know Rich has told me he's got to go soon, but
Rich. Well, just before while you're gone, Rich, if you're still listening, I mean, on that point, I mean, the quintessential English dish is fish and chips, right? Would you say, Mike, fish and chips?
Oh yeah, yeah.
Well, do you know where fish and chips come from?
I would like to know.
Oh, Rich, are you still there?
I'm still there. I'm hanging on
to
hear this.
Good, good. Well, Rich. Fish and chips, which is now the quintessential English dish, came from Sephardic Jews who came to this country in the Middle Ages. And they referred to batter fish in the East End of London.
Now, that's news I can use the next time I'm eating fish on a Friday. Thank you, Kevin.
No, thank you, Rich. Listen, Rich, keep in touch. Ring in again. Always glad to hear from Birmingham.
Great job. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Rich.
Now, Birmingham, Alabama, and there's Birmingham, England. Do you know what if you were to say to anybody in the British Isles, what is the foodstuff, the cuisine of Birmingham, England? Do you know what it would be, Mike?
Oh, I'm guessing that like the fish and chips, the seafood, like you said. I mean,
No. Birmingham is very much landlocked. It's right in the center of England. So I'm just trying to help you out here.
Okay.
So what do you think it would be?
Landlocked meat, you know. Meat and potatoes.
Meat and potatoes. Good guess, but wrong.
Okay.
Let me explain. Because Birmingham, the West Midlands in the 1950s, was very much one of the major centers of inward immigration of people originally from India.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. A lot of people came from India, Pakistan, and Bengal, the Bengal portion of what is now Bangladesh, I think. And what they did was they were very entrepreneurial because a lot of them had been booted out of places like Uganda and Kenya and these places in East Africa. And they came to England and what did they do? They set up restaurants. So there are streets and streets and whole districts that are known as curry houses, right? And if you go to these places, you get these amazing curry dishes, which are very much British because they had to temper the cuisine for the British temperament. Anyway, listen, enough about food. We're now going to feed the spirit. When we come back, we're going to pray the chaplet. Get your requests in. This is the best offer you're going to get all day. Anything you want to pray for, including the United States, we'll pray for them in the chaplet. Coming up next.